Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Flow Grappling Podcast, A Fistful of Collars. And we are kind of back to our regularly scheduled programming. We know it's been a minute, but myself, Howell, Reed, and Chase, back in the studio for the first time in what feels like forever, with no special guests and no trips and no travel getting in the way of things. So finally a chance for us to do what we do best, sit around and talk about jiu-jitsu.
It's just us this week. No Gordon, no Wagner. You guys are just going to have to deal with us this week.
It's a little bit disappointing for me, to be honest. No special guests, but we do have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. It's been a very busy time, right?
Very busy. I mean, to be honest, the 2019 started with a bang, right? And it looks like it's probably not going to stop right up until Worlds, because we had Europeans, and then there was Abu Dhabi Grand Slam, Third Coast Grappling, and there was a ton of Fight to Win events and ADCC trials, and it's just going to keep going like that for the next 5 months. But yeah. I guess today, all right, what should we talk about? Because there's been a lot happening recently, but some big stuff for me. I think we got to talk about ADCC trials, right?
I mean, it's in the title. It's in the title of the video today.
Okay, let's jump right in.
Yeah. You guys were both on the ground. Give me your thoughts.
Well, it was wild,
man. We went to the ADCC trials last year or 2 years ago. I'm sorry, East Coast and West Coast, and I was in East Coast trials back in November, West Coast here just last weekend, and it's just like every single time it feels like it just gets bigger, it just gets crazier. I just see more heel hooks, I see more submissions. Like this one especially, it just felt so big. So there's so many competitors. Man, it was such a wild tournament. It's like hard to even know exactly where to start talking about this tournament, but it was such a fun one, man. It really was. I don't know. What stuck out to you as a?
Well, I mean, you nailed it. It was fun and it was huge. There's 342 competitors, which I believe is the biggest North American trials to date. Apparently, it's not the biggest ever ADCC trials.
Like, no, that's what I thought.
I spoke to the guys on the ground at ADCC there, the crew that travels around to all the various trials events around the world, and they said that they have had Brazilian events, which have been pretty chunky, you know.
Gotcha.
But in terms of North America, I think this is the biggest ever, and it kind of makes me wonder why. Because, you know, ADCC has always been the pinnacle of submission grappling, right? It's always been considered the Olympics of jiu-jitsu, no-gi jiu-jitsu, shall we say. But, you know, it's no secret how to get there, yeah? You go to the trials, or you get an invite. And there aren't that many invites. So the kind of the trials is the best bet for most people. And I'm wondering what's changed that so many people now are thinking, yeah, we're going to do that. And I'm wondering, is it the rise of no-gi jiu-jitsu? Is it the kind of the example set by, let's say, the Danaher Death Squad and, you know, kind of high-profile American grapplers competing and doing well? I'm also thinking about guys like Keenan and, you know, Gio Martinez. There's a lot of good representatives of various schools and various styles of no-gi jiu-jitsu who are doing well at ADCC, and it kind of makes me think other people want to emulate that. What do you think?
I mean, I think that, you know, we talk a lot about Gordon on the podcast and stuff, but I think you really got to give a lot of credit, in my opinion, to Gordon Ryan, just because I think 2017 ADCC World Championships was such a big tournament, and so many people paid attention to it. It felt like a real, you know, obviously, like you said, ADCC has been around for a long time. Everybody knows about ADCC, but especially 2017, it really felt like a big coming out party. And then especially, you know, I don't think it's any, I think you guys would all agree, right, that Gordon has just since ADCC become, you know, such a big star, and it really all started for him at ADCC. I think a lot of everybody is able to see, oh man, like you know, Gordon went there his first time at ACC. He won, and look where he's at now.
Yeah.
And so I think, if I can get an invite and I can go win ACC, you know, I can become a monumental star in the sport as well.
I think there's a greater accessibility and understanding, too, of leg locks. Like, I remember when I first started training, ADCC was like a whole other world just to watch because these leg entanglements and the danger and risk involved.
That's a good point.
And now people, I think, are a little bit less fearful of the positions and are willing to embrace that. Or even Josh Hinger said, I don't like to attack legs, but I know how to get around that and attack the neck. So,
well, the one thing that really, really stood out for me at ADCC trials was the sheer number of leg lock attacks we saw. Like, everybody was going for leg
attacks. And I actually thought we'd see less, you know, or like maybe not less because... Or we'd see more, better defense, I guess, right? Because the Danaher DVDs are out. You know, people have been watching guys leg locks for a few years. It's obviously a very, very popular trend in jiu-jitsu right now. So I thought we'd maybe see a little bit more of an evening of the gap between, you know, guys who are leg lockers and guys who aren't. But
no, we haven't.
We still saw, man, like I said, I can't count how many heel hooks I still saw. Like, you know, it's still a very highly successful submission.
And it's interesting you mentioned that there's still a big gap. There is a big gap, but it seems that there are more people now attacking for the leg locks and doing it well, right? They've got the system. They've been studying and they kind of know what to do. But then there is still a huge kind of sort of, you know, chunk of the jiu-jitsu stroke grappling world that still seems to be lagging behind. And it kind of makes me wonder, why is that? I mean, you guys know that heel hooks are a thing at ADCC, right? You got to be prepared for that. Maybe it's confidence in their own games that they feel that they can avoid it, or maybe it's just an ignorance on their part, or maybe sometimes it could actually be a result of their environment. Because as we know, a lot of schools don't allow you to train heel hooks. You know, and they're like, oh, no, heel hooks are banned in my gym. Like, the only time that they get the chance to go up against it is in a competition. To be fair,
that's a bad scenario.
Well, yeah. Especially if you're going to ADCC trials, where there's going to be a lot of guys, that's exactly what they're going to be looking for. So,
yeah, you're definitely going to get tapped if you're not training heel hooks in the gym. We've got a
fight to win. CEO and President Seth Daniels chiming in here saying that the kids stole the show. And I have to agree, from home, I didn't get to go to this trials, but I was watching. And there were so many teenagers I'm thinking of. There were Will Toll twins, Roberto Jimenez, the Tackett brothers.
Yeah.
They're out
trials
there.
Winning Nicky Ryan.
Trials running Nicky Ryan, of course. Like, it's insane how good they are at the leg locks, by the way, and all positions. And they're still in high school or younger.
Yeah, especially, man, you got to mention that William Tackett. That guy, I think he really came out of nowhere. You know, I think we watched him a few years ago in, you know, Blue Belt Juvenile and last year and things. But, I mean, I don't think any of us really expected how good those guys are. And his little brother, Andrew. And I believe there's a third Tackett.
Oh, my God. There's more of
brother,
them?
that we haven't even seen yet. I could be wrong about that.
He's still being programmed. He's not ready for release yet.
But, dang, that William Tackett guy, he impressed me so much. And he beat Enrico Coco, who's, you know, one of the most seasoned veterans of ADCC and ADCC trials. And so for an 18, 17-year-old kid, I'm not sure exactly how old he is, to go out there and beat Enrico. And you know, he lost in the finals, but gave John a good match. And you're totally right. Seth's totally right, man. It's just like the next generation. And that's what's great about ADCC trials, right?
You get
it's
to see them.
It's not blue belt versus purple belt or purple belt versus purple belt. It is just one division, and everybody gets in there. And, like,
you know, this is maybe crazy. A little bit off, kind of on a tangent, but we had an interesting conversation with somebody pretty high up in the jiu-jitsu industry. I'm not going to say who it is, but a kind of a real mover and shaker in the jiu-jitsu
mystery
industry.
Mystery and intrigue.
But remember, we had the discussion about how, you know, they wanted to eliminate belts from competition. And, you know, that's a pretty entrenched thing in jiu-jitsu about how, you know, a blue belt is a blue belt and purple belt is purple belt and so on and so on. And, you know, stay in your lane. You know, you compete against guys in your division, right? And the idea was, well, you know, if you've got confidence in your game and if you want to become a world-class competitor, then the belt shouldn't really matter. You know, you should just have everybody compete against everybody. And I thought that was a totally wild idea, and I'm really not sure how that would go down in the community. I kind of feel that there would be a lot of resistance to that. But you get that at ADCC. You get that at ADCC trials. You know, we've seen, like you say, juvenile blue belts, like the Ruotolo twins. And, you know, you've got, like, very young, you know, teenage purple belts like Nicole Evangelista, Elizabeth Clay, Nikki Ryan, Tackett. Yeah. And then you've got seasoned black belts like Josh Hinger, like, you know, Richie Martinez and so on and so on. And then Nick Rodriguez, the 9-month blue belt out of Henzo Gracie, you know, like coming out and winning gold. So it's kind of a free for all, right?
It's part of fun, man. Battle Royale. I'm all for it, by the way. The open competition belt rank doesn't matter. I think in this proposed scenario that we were discussing, there would be like a qualifying tournament, and that would be at your belt rank, and that would get you the ticket in to where it would be all the winners compete. And to me, that's a fascinating idea. And we've seen it at Spider, ADCC, and other events that mix levels, mix belts.
Michael Galvao has been
Murdering black belts, and he's an orange belt or something, a juvenile 2 blue belt. The skills are there, so I think there will be some resistance to it, but I'm all for it, and I think we'll see more and more, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think that the next generation is really going to change the game, you know, and they clearly kind of already are, and, you know, maybe guys who we expected to make to the finals or guys who we expected to win got knocked off by some of those guys. And Roberto Jimenez, another young, you know, he's a brown belt, but another young man that did well as well. So it's like these next generation guys are hungry. These young guys are hungry, and they're looking to make a name for themselves now, not tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, feel that.
So we covered the youth, but I got to give a shout out to the old dogs here too. And
choo-choo. That's very true.
Loved watching Josh Hinger beast his way through the 88-kilogram bracket. Just doing his own game, commitment to the head and neck attacks, I should say, face attacks maybe, but he's fun to watch.
Yeah, we got a clip of Josh, right? Should we roll the clip?
Yeah,
let's take a look at that,
dude. Josh is making guillotines cool. Josh is single handedly making guillotines like the coolest submission there is. And
so this clip is from his final, right?
Yeah, this is Stanley Rosa versus Josh Hinger in the final. 88 kilograms.
Look at the way that just when Josh latches onto that neck, he just does not let go. Look at that. Like, Stanley's doing his best. He's trying to bail out of it. He's trying to roll, and Josh is just like clamped on.
Chase and I,
I've had the pleasure.
Know from experience this situation, but yeah, like, you know, in a little interview afterwards, he says, you know, I'm once I get this position, like, Good luck getting Josh Hinger off your neck once you're in this position.
Did you ever see Josh's post about being a connoisseur of chins?
Amazing post.
Yeah, apparently he can tell a lot by a person just by touching their chin. Because he has like this incredible whole series that all comes off the chin strap, right? And that, in that case, that was not a guillotine. That was an anaconda choke. Yeah. He switched to it.
That's the crazy thing about him is he can just cycle through those different grips so fluidly.
Yeah.
And feeling it too when you're trying to bail out and roll one way, he just changes his one step ahead.
It's like if you think you have good guillotine defense, well, you better roll have good D'Arce defense. And then you better have good anaconda defense. And so it's like, you know, it's not just one choke that Josh is trying to get you with. He's got a whole system there. And yeah, I was so happy, obviously, you know. A lot of us, we've worked with Josh over the years and stuff, and man, how sick was that to see him go out there and win?
Well, he came pretty close last time, right? He took third at the 2017 trials, and what was it Reedy said to you? But he said that he didn't want to get the invite, right? Even though he's a 3-time Nogi World Champion, he didn't want the invite.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what he said. You know, I think that, you know, there's been some kind of like, I don't know, blanket on the word I'm trying to think of, but you know, people get a little complacent, that's what I'm trying to think. Mm-hmm. Complacent and think, you know, oh, I won Nogi Worlds, I'll probably get an ADCC invite, and then maybe they do, maybe they don't, right?
Probably not, though.
Probably not. If you're banking on it, you know, I'd say probably not. And so you gotta love the attitude of Josh. You gotta respect the attitude of you know, not waiting for any handouts and going out there and getting it. And
that's specifically what he did. Said that he wanted to do it the old-fashioned way. I like that a lot, because there is a lot of people who kind of, you know, they kind of have high opinions of themselves, and they feel that they should get an invite.
They deserve things or whatnot. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, Josh said, "Hey, you know, I don't deserve anything. I'll go out there and earn my way," and so glad that he did, because man, one of the most exciting guys to watch in jiu-jitsu, and like you said, not a heel hooker, not 17 years old, so so you know, definitely he's out there representing.
Yeah, speaking of exciting. Man, one of the most exciting guys for me at the entire tournament was the 77 kilogram winner, John Combs. Mm. Now, it's John, kind of funny.
John.
It's kind of funny because literally I saw people asking the question after trials, like, who the hell is John Combs? Mm. Like, who is this guy who came out of nowhere to win the 77 kilogram trial? And I kind of feel it's a little bit unfair because we've been following John, you know, man, since he was a brown belt, right? Since he tore his way through PANS 2016, tapping out everybody in his division, like just one after the other.
Yeah,
incredible.
He had less than 5 minutes of total match time in his entire bracket. Just
submitted Isaac Ibáñez. I was going to say, I think like one of the only guys to beat Isaac at brown belt.
Submitted
there.
Him 52 seconds with the guillotine, the comatine, as he calls it. Him and Josh have a lot in common.
And then later that year, the 2016 Grand Prix in Copa Podio, the middleweight Grand Prix, he went down to Argentina, and that's where we really got to know him, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where the chant comes from, because he won over the hearts of the Argentinian crowd, even in defeat, and he went out there, and literally nobody knew who this random American was in Argentina, and by the end of the night, they were chanting his name like he was a king of Buenos Aires. It was incredible.
Yeah, I think Keenan said it best on the broadcast when he was commentating at trials, that John is just like amazing to watch. He's a pit bull, he's a fire starter of energy, and he brings it to anybody. He's fearless. I watched him at the Austin Open because he actually came out and stayed with me, which is really cool. And he took on Joel Gabriel in the absolute and almost submitted him with a guillotine. I mean, Joel had to like really, really bust out of there. And there's 90-pound weight difference at least. So if you guys haven't seen that one night in Argentina, the legend of John Combs, pull it up. It's on YouTube on the site. And it really shows just how fun John Combs is to watch.
And this match right here that we're watching right here, I think this really encapsulates John's attitude and John's kind of like never quit, you know, like, and he really does have the heart of a champion, man. Mm. Like, and I think this match right here where he was deep in an arm triangle there, you know, and that's, it looked very bleak when it was happening. And, you know, I did a quick little interview with him afterwards, and he really pointed that out as a moment of that he wasn't going to forget, because it sounded like that choke was very, very close. And he basically said, I'm not going to tap, I'm going to go out. And he survived and ended up coming back and submitting that guy. And I think that is just like, that is who John Combs is as a grappler.
That's crazy. The ref just commented here, yeah. Eduardo Crema. I don't know if you're saying your name right. He said, I can't believe you got out of that arm triangle.
that's me too, man. I was filming it, and I obviously like watching John, and I'm not sure. I forget the other guy's name there. I apologize. But I thought it was for sure. I thought it was over. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it was over right there.
It was a done deal.
Yeah.
Wow, incredible. I mean, John actually said to me as well in his post-match interview after he won the entire thing that he said that up until now, he's kind of got by with, you know, being scrappy, having a lot of heart, you know. But he did have a rough road when he got to black belt, you know. He tapped out a couple of, you know, he tapped out Marcus Tinoco at PANS 1 year. That was a big deal, 2017 PANS, you know. Marcus Tinoco, one of the best guys in the world. But then he would often have really, really tough first-round matches or second-round matches, and he would not proceed in the division. So yeah, rough, you know?
I remember Europeans, right? He had Michael Lange, who's a very, very technical, tough.
He had Hanato Canuto 1 year,
and
too.
And then he did the absolute division and had Hanato Canuto in there. So yeah, you know, those are definitely a couple tough matches. And
but he said to me that, you know, that he kind of realized that he was going to have to measure his heart and his, you know, his will to win with technique. And basically he had some injuries that he was dealing with last year. That's why we didn't see him compete much in 2018. But he used that time to really focus on teaching as well as training and kind of switch his mindset a little bit to the way that he trains. He's training more intelligently and focusing more on technique. And man, I think if this is John with those two things, you know, at the same level, then I'm kind of excited to see that what he's got, because that was really impressive performance.
Absolutely. You know, like you said, there was 112 guys in 77. Yep. 112 guys.
Six matches to win gold. And he had a bye in the first round.
And five submissions.
Yeah. Five out of six matches ended by submission.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Insanely impressive. Insanely impressive day for John. And man, that's the other thing. ADCC trials, it was a long day.
Yeah, it was.
It was a long day. These guys got there 8 a.m., weighed in before 9, and we didn't do the finals until, what, 9:30, 10?
Easily, yeah. You know? Yeah, I'd say so.
It was a long day for these guys, and yeah, man, I think that just goes to show even more, especially Josh and all the winners, you know, their will to win. It was not an easy tournament to win by any means.
Yeah. I know there were a lot of good stories coming out of
so many. It's hard to touch on them all, really, because, there were some great matches. You know, the female divisions, I loved the female divisions, too. Like, there was actually, I thought, some really good, a lot of competitive matches there as
Jenna Bishop really stood out to me with her wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know,
She's taking people down all over the place.
ADCC exposes a lot of jiu-jitsu athletes for really not having any sort of stand-up game. I can count myself in that group. And Jenna looked fantastic on the feet and won a couple matches that way, I believe.
Super aggressive, yeah. The over 60-kilogram trials winner as well, Amanda Levy, really stood out to me because, I'll be honest, she wasn't really on my radar coming into this. And she did compete at the previous trials, and she didn't do that great. I believe she lost by submission. But she came in this time, and, you know, when she made it into the finals and after she won, I made a point of looking her up. And this is somebody, she's an MMA fighter, she does kickboxing, she does grappling, and she's been trained since she was a kid, little kid, you know? And it's really interesting because she's recently opened her own gym as well in the Philadelphia area, I believe. So, you know, she's a brown belt, she's coming out of a really good stable of fighters, you know, the kind of the Henzo Gracie, Ricardo Almeida stroke, you know, network there in sort of Jersey, Philly. And for somebody to come to trials like that and blow through everybody, I was like, damn, that is impressive. So a lot of good performances, but I think this is one that we have to really talk about, right? Is the one.
That Mason Fowler choke was crazy, though, too.
Was insane.
That was absolutely insane. Come on, that was a crazy one. But go ahead. Yeah, I agree. There is one we should talk about.
Before we say that as well, I should also, man, you just reminded me, by just saying the magic word, the choke. All but one final was finished by submission. How crazy is that?
Many submissions.
Lots of submissions.
I was just like left and right catching chokes and heel hooks.
That's a good day to be filming. Sometimes we're out there shooting and it's like, oh man, another vantage battle here. But that sounds fun.
Yeah, there was just so many submissions. It was crazy.
But yes, the one that we're really everybody was talking about was Nicky Ryan. Apparently there's a new king. He's looking to push his brother
classic.
Off that
I like
throne.
That.
Yeah. So Nicky, man, he came out and there were a lot of eyes on Nicky. I thought it was really interesting, right, Reed, that anytime Nicky had a match, it seemed like everybody went to whichever mat he was on. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pressure for a 17-year-old kid to deal with, right?
It is. It really is. And like we were talking about earlier there, you know, I think that this was a big win for Nicky. This was like a really big win. And like we said, it's a, you know, there's no gimmies for any of these guys. You know, Nicky had some tough matches and had some, you know, tough guys in there. And honestly, we haven't seen Nicky really do that before.
Nope.
Excel as much as he did in a tournament environment. Of course, we've seen him excel in a super fight environments and things like that. But this was a new fold, in my opinion.
For me,
Nicky,
it really clinched the hype as being real because, you know, John and Nicky's coaches and his brother, they're very calculated with the super fights they accept, right? Like they take smart fights for Nicky. And so putting him in trials, an open tournament, and taking on a beast like Keith Kerkorian in the final and submitting him is the real deal. So.
And it's a risk as well, right? Because, you know, if you've spent time in developing that kind of that profile and that status, then, you know, a tournament, a lot can go wrong in a tournament, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's just like, you know, the middle match, you know, somebody tweaks your knee or something and it can derail your performance all the way out. And it's important to note that Nicky actually came out of this tournament, he was pretty beat up. Mm-hmm. I forget how many matches he had in total. I think it was
five.
Five matches. There you go.
He had a bye in the first round too.
Gotcha. And and he right at the end, I believe, of the event, you know, his shoulder was really messed up from, I think, at some point, maybe even the final. But he went out and he tapped everybody.
Five matches, five submissions. Like, definitely, I think Nicky is the winner of the tournament, the OW Outstanding Wrestler, or the Hodge Trophy winner. If they had that,
out of here with that
at ADCC, I think it would be Nicky, just because how dominant he was, especially in the final. I think we all know how tough Keith Kerkorian is. He made the finals
That's double silver for Keith, right? At both trials.
Double silver for Keith. So, you know, and who knows? Keith could get an invite. That he gave out two very impressive performances.
And Keith's still a brown belt, right?
Still a brown belt. Just got his brown belt not too long ago.
I didn't even know Keith that well at all. I heard about him a little bit right before the East Coast trial. So now he's like a staple for me as a 10th Planet guy to watch.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the fastest rising guys. And I think, man, to make – he had five matches, and I think he had – definitely multiple submission, if not all of his matches were submissions. So, you know, Keith, I think very tough to make it to the finals two times in a row, and then for Nikki to submit him. You know, Ethan didn't submit him. It was just a points match. So, you know, Nikki was able to get this. This is choke right here. We're watching Nikki versus Keith Kerkorian. This was the final right here. So, yeah, just an insanely impressive performance from Nikki. And then, you know, we talked to him afterwards, and he's very focused on winning the 2019 ADCC World Championships. That's what's the most fun about this entire process, in my opinion, is that now we get to see these winners mix it up. You know, Nikki could mix it up in there with Cobrinha or Paulo Miao or you know, some of these guys.
Have any brothers ever medaled at the same ADCC?
Ooh, what a good question.
I don't know if Solo and Shanji competed at the same events.
It is possible, right? There are a lot of brothers.
There are brothers.
We'll have to dive into the
viewers. Let us know out there if you're watching and you happen to know. Have any other brother or sister duo? I don't believe that. That would be well known, I think, if sisters pulled that off. Have medal at the same ADCC.
Good question. But going back to Nikki for a second, I a couple of things really stood out about this. The number one, he looked very different than Nikki that we've seen in previous ADCCs, right? He's 2 years older. He's a lot bigger. He cut 16 pounds to make the weight limit this time. How much did he say that he was under last time?
I think he said he was like 135, so he's 10 pounds underneath that.
And so that's a big swing.
He's 26 pounds bigger than he was the last time he competed at ADCC. You know, he's growing. He's filling out. His technique is obviously,
he looked bigger, right?
Like
his back is looking big. His shoulders look bigger, you know? So he's definitely looking stronger.
And I felt that his match with Keith was, you know, incredible, the final. But Nikki himself said that his toughest match of the day was Cade Ruotolo. Isn't that crazy?
I just watched that before the podcast, actually. I hadn't seen it yet.
Wild match.
It's a fun match. And Cade looked really good.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, he eventually got caught in a leg lock. It's not a huge surprise, right? Because I believe it was Cade who also got tapped with a leg lock at the last ADCC trials, and he kind of hurt his knee a little bit. Is that right?
No.
It was Ty? I can't tell the difference between those kids.
They both got tapped by heel hooks. But it was Ty.
At East Coast Trials?
At East Coast Trials.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ty was the one who got tapped from Ethan and kind of hurt his knee.
Gotcha. Okay. So sorry, kids. I can't tell the difference.
I'm making it my mission to tell those two guys apart. I feel like I'm doing pretty good.
It only took me 3-4 years to figure out the difference between Joao and Paulo Miao.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, true.
And there's the Luna brothers as well, Mateus and Matias, identical twins. I'm kind of 90% certain I know which one's which now.
I don't have that one down.
Yeah, one's got a scar, the other one doesn't. That's the defining factor. But man, those two brothers, the Ruotolos, no idea. But also another guy who really impressed me in Nikki's run was that Richard Alarcón
from One Jiu-Jitsu. I didn't know him that well either, but I was watching his matches and he looked very tough. He beat John Callestine, correct? And I believe he
took third place
second match.
So. Yeah, I think you're right. So I mean, he was looking really good as well, and I like that ADCC kind of introduces us to people that we might not otherwise know. You know, like Stanley Rosa, for example. You know, took silver to Josh Hinger. I kind of had heard of him as an affiliate member of the Henzo squad. He trains out of the Bronx. I didn't know I didn't know him well enough. I hadn't seen that much of him to know that he could go out there and beat a 3-time trials winner like James Brasco. You know, that was incredible, right? So there's always a way for these guys to kind of, you know, ADCC trials just gives us the opportunity to learn about people.
It brings out a lot of different guys that we don't see, right? You know, we get the jiu-jitsu guys, but then you get the wrestlers, you get the MMA guys, you know, we get the like couple other martial art, like there's like usually one or two, like maybe like a sambo guy or like a, you know, some other weird martial art that I'm not sure.
Some people crawl out of the woods, you know.
Yeah, there's some guys there from Hyaston, which is Goku's team, and they're kind of like a Sambo stroke fusion, right? So that was kind of cool.
10th Planet, you know, had obviously a huge squad out there as well, so awesome. It's just like a really mix of like so many different styles and everything like that. It really makes for some fun, exciting matches. I know I cannot wait for the ADCC Worlds.
I'm so hyped for Worlds.
It's just going to be like, I love that this is an ADCC year. You know, from what I hear in the grapevine, this is going to be the biggest, baddest ADCC Worlds there's ever been.
I think tickets just went on sale like this week. Ooh. I saw that Mo, the promoter for Worlds, has released the link there. You guys can find it. Just search for ADCC Worlds 2019 tickets, and I'm sure you'll find it.
Yeah,
and
they say that they're going like really pulling out all the stops for the production this time as well. It's going to be like, you know, a real, real show. It's not just going to be a case of a couple mats in the middle of an arena.
So time to make some predictions then. Who's going to win the 66 in September? Who's going to win 77?
Ooh, I don't know.
On the spot,
man. To be honest, I'm really excited because in March we have the Brazilian trials. In April we have the second European trials. And I believe it's May has the second Asian trials. That's in Japan, in Tokyo. So this, I'm kind of really interested to see who's going to come out of those ones as well. Like the Brazilian ones especially. Because there's only one South American trials this year. It's in Sao Paulo, Brazil, at the end of March.
And do we have any idea if Kennedy is going to do that? Because if Kennedy and Cobrinha both go to ADCC, I would be pretty hyped on that.
Yeah, well, the whole reason for Kennedy doing light featherweight at Europeans, because he did featherweight at Nogi Worlds in December, light featherweight at Europeans in January, is because Cobrinha said to me that basically Kennedy is gradually dropping weight and so that he can do 66 kilos, which is like 145, 146 pounds roughly, at the ADCC trials at the end of March. So whether he's going to do PANS, maybe not, because PANS is like 2 weeks before trials. And that's going to affect things, actually, because there's going to be a bunch of guys. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do both. But I have heard through the grapevine there's a few people who's very interested in trials. I know Gabriel Arges is going to be in the country around about that time. You know?
Interesting.
Speaking on the kind of behind the scenes to a few people, some big names have their eyes on the trials. So I think the Brazilian trials could provide us with some. Because, you know, normally the big-name Brazilians that we see in ADCC all the time, they don't need to do trials, right?
They're qualified champions.
So, exactly. So I'm just, you know, maybe you can get through process of elimination.
That would explain why Gabriel would be excited to fight Craig Jones next weekend as a little ADCC prep fight. That's Grapple Fest 4 that's going down in, I think, Liverpool in the UK. It'll be streamed live on Flow Grappling and, of course, available on demand. But I can't wait for that match, Craig versus Gabriel. Good clash of styles.
Submission
there.
Only, right?
Submission only. I believe it's a 20-minute match.
Grapplefest doing some big things over there.
They are.
Really gaining some steam.
Lachlan Giles is also in the co-main event against Bradley Hill, and Fionn Davis will be on the show as well. So, yeah, that's a very intriguing match. Like, Craig, obviously an amazing leg lock artist, but, you know, pretty good all-round. Say he'd have to be a bit bigger than Gabriel, right?
But Gabriel's been getting chunky.
He's been working out.
Yeah. It's true. Gabriel has been getting bigger.
Did you see Edwin's post about how he's, what, 185 pounds right now?
I just saw that he looked bigger than Cyborg in some Instagram post.
Whoa.
No, for real. Edwin posted like a body composition shot from like a, you know, the gym that he trains at. And he's like 180 something pounds, 8% body fat. He's like, goodbye lightweight.
Oh, dang.
Never again.
Dang. Right. I know he's cut a lot of weight to get down to lightweight.
Yeah.
In the past, so.
He's looking big.
I would love to see Edward in at ADCC. I think he'd be a great addition. Fortunately, he hasn't been able to do any of the trials, so we'll see how that goes. But he's definitely got a fun style in Nogi, very loose, open, dangerous, so.
Yeah.
He's a finisher. That's the best thing, right? Those guys, they go out there and they tap guys out, so. But yeah, Edwin still kind of recovering his knee. And speaking of knee injuries, Gordon. Gordon's going to have to get surgery. Now, the question is, how long is that going to take him out for?
That's the question.
Is he going to be able to come back with enough time? Because I believe that they did a 3-month training camp for the last ADCC Worlds. In 2017, they spent 3 months just training for ADCC Worlds.
Yeah, why not? That's their pinnacle, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It worked out, I guess, right?
But, you know, is the kind of the layoff, the enforced layoff because of the injury, is that going to eat into his preparation time? And, you know, will he miss now the heavyweight Grand Prix that's been scheduled for August, that he, you know, the IBJJF heavyweight Grand Prix? A lot of question marks over that, and we won't know because Gordon said that he's going to hopefully get surgery at the end of this month. And apparently the LCL is, if you're going to tear something, the LCL is one of the better ones to mess up. So hopefully he won't be out too long.
I have read 6 to 8 weeks for a normal post-surgery recovery back to training. But who knows? It all depends on how invasive the surgery is and everything. But
apparently it's an open procedure as well. Like some knee operations they can do just like with
the scope.
Arthroscopy. But with the LCL, they do have to slice you open.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw, but PJ Barch was walking around. And
very
him
similar
and,
knee brace.
Yeah, him and Gordon had matching knee braces, right?
Yeah.
And PJ had like a huge scar right at the front of his kneecap from the a huge ACL reconstruction that he had to undergo. And he's going to be out, well, indefinitely, to be honest. You know, it'll be a while before we see him back. So it's a shame because I actually thought that PJ, if he'd done West Coast Trials, he probably could have been one of the favorites to
potentially win. He's got a great style, mix of wrestling and submission heavy.
He beat William Tackett at the East Coast Trials. So,
that was where he hurt his knee.
Yeah, so, I believe it was that match. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that's a lot to unpack. ADCC was definitely a lot of fun, and I think we're all super excited. Even we Seth has chimed in here. The CEO of Fight to Win has promised that this Worlds will look like something we've never seen before because he's helping out with the production of that. So that will be pretty damn cool, I think.
That is going
to
be good.
We can talk a little bit about Fight to Win, too. I just came back from Hawaii, Fight to Win 100.
So that's right, you did do that.
Feels like it was three months ago, honestly. It feels like it was like forever ago.
I'm surprised it took you this long to mention it. Like, I was in Hawaii.
Pull up the cliff diving.
So that was Fight to Win 100. That was a big one. And
how did that go? Hawaii, that's the first time that Fight to Win ever been to Hawaii, right?
Dude, it was terrible.
No. You guys should never go to that.
Oh my gosh, Hawaii was just absolutely incredible. It was so much fun, And I'd never been to Hawaii, but the island, the culture there was so welcoming, and the Hawaiians there were so excited to have jiu-jitsu there. They were really primed for it. It seemed like in the past, they just had a Bellator event not too long ago.
Yeah.
But besides that, it sounded like really the only other jiu-jitsu tournaments that have come around is like the Nagas, So this was a very fresh and new experience for them. Of course, I think a lot of them had seen Fight to Wins or seen highlights and things like that. From the minute like that place was open, it was packed, 1500 1800 people from 5:30 to 10:30. It was a very attentive crowd.
Speaking of the crowd, because I was asking Seth, we were hanging out a little bit there last weekend in LA, and he likes the rowdy crowds, He likes the crowds who get drunk and bang on the mat and stuff. And he said that the Hawaiians were pretty chill, kind of as you'd expect, but they were singing. Is that right? There were a lot of songs.
Yeah, especially the Caverina squad there. They really brought a big contingent. They had Tracy Goodale.
She's in the main event.
Was in the main event. She's of Caverina's, and then Caesar. Casimiro there.
Sorry, Caesar.
he's also Caverina's, and he really was very clear to me, was a big part of the team over there as well. So and they brought a huge, huge squad, and so especially it felt like, especially whenever the Caverina guys were up, there was a whole thing.
Didn't you say there was 15 guys from their team? Is that the team?
Yeah.
15 guys on one guys, Fight to Win event. That sounds pretty Caverina. Fun. I would love to go and support 15 of my crew Fight to Win.
Yeah, but there's a lot of schools. Helson Gracie, I heard that he'd been in Hawaii for over 20
years.
He
was considered like the godfather of jiu-jitsu in Hawaii for a long time. Yeah. He left now. I think he's back in Brazil nowadays. But I think he has a lot of black belts in Hawaii.
Yeah.
He was there. He was the guy for years. Yeah.
In a number of schools. And there were schools from different islands. I think one of them was called the Compound. And they were from the Big Island. They're from Hilo, I believe. And so they brought guys from different islands to this,
I think people are maybe underestimate exactly how much jiu-jitsu there is in Hawaii, right?
Because it's very popular.
It's not that big a place, but there is a ton of jiu-jitsu
just there. Right around the corner from my From where I was staying, there was a jiu-jitsu gym, you know, and then there was a Caverinha. There's like five Caverinha's gyms on the island, plus there's like three or four, I believe, Helsing Gracie gyms on the island. You know, and that the Ali Malay, McFarland there, who just is the Bellator 125 pound champion. So, and of course, BJ Penn. So, just like the fight culture there, man. Like I said, there's not much else to say that the place was rocking. The place was so excited for jiu-jitsu. And I think Fight to Win 100, it was just like a real great kickoff to what I think is going to be a huge transformative year for Fight to Win, you know. And we, you know, they just started Fight to Win Judo on Fight to Win 101.
Man, I love that. That was great. I was saying to Seth when I saw him, I was like, man, I didn't know what to expect from the first one, but if that's the way it's going to be, I'm really excited to see the rest.
And really cool concept.
They're going to load like one or two matches on every event, pretty much, right? Or more.
Seth is very well connected within the judo community, I think, and he's getting a lot of.
Because he was a judo athlete himself, right?
Yeah, he was an Olympic hopeful for many years. He trained at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado and was trying to do that thing. So, you know, I think he's got...
explains the foot sweep.
Yeah,
foot sweep from hell that he's got.
Yeah, for real.
And they've got a packed schedule of events coming up
and
as
then
well,
just looking
you
know? Up, looking this weekend in 102, has some big names, of course.
Muhammad Ali,
one of our favorites.
Taking on Max Jimenez.
2018 Black Belt of the Year, taking on another guy we know well. Max Jimenez, and then I think from there, 103, 104, like, there are some big matches we got
there
coming.
There are, right?
So it's going to be a big year for Fight to Win.
103 has got Gutenberg Pereira up against Alexandro Ciccone in the main event. This is in Houston, Texas on March 1st, by the way. And then you got the return of Hannette Stack, a legend
in
women's jiu-jitsu. Yeah. She's taking on Tubby Alaquin. And then you got Tomoyuki Hashimoto is on the card as well. He's got Jose Carlos Lima of GF Team.
Which
really
is a crazy
cool
match. Both those guys are not based in the U.S. Tomoyuki's in Japan most of the year, and Jose Carlos Lima, I think, lives in Brazil most of the year as well. So.
Yeah. I mean, they could be, you know, potentially training in the States for PANS or something, because that's only a couple weeks out, so they could be doing cards, but it's great to have them on the show. And then Fight to Win 104 is stacked as well. You've got Lovato Jr. versus Yuri Samoyes in the main event. That's an incredible match right there. And you also got Manuel Hibimar versus DJ Jackson. I know Nachielli de Jesus is fighting Talita Nogueira as well. Mm. So and more matches TBD. So it's just, man, from here on out, the Fight to Win schedule is packed.
Yeah, they are really stepping up, I think, their cards and putting on some, you know, the events have always been great, obviously, but it just really feels like they're throwing out some big names, some heavy hitters, and it's going to be a good year for them as well.
You know, let's sort of bring that up again once. You know, Yuri Samoyes versus Lovato Jr. How badass a match is that? No gi match.
I love that Lovato still takes pro super fights, even though he's right in contention
against
for
dangerous
a title.
Opponents.
Listen, two-time ADCC world champion, multiple-time no gi world champion. Yeah, Yuri is the man. Yuri's an absolute monster, but. I love that Lovato is still out there testing himself and competing on the pro stage. It's great.
And I know Dallas is like a second home to Lovato.
Oh, Lovato.
Yeah, that's where kind of he started training, right? He started training with the Machados in Dallas. You know, him and his dad would drive down from Oklahoma. It's like a 6 or 7 hour drive, I think. And they would drive down and train with the Machados and... And what's his name? Chuck Norris down in
what's his name?
Slap. down in Dallas.
<Yeah. laughs>
So I think that'll be a good homecoming for Lovato too. That's
very
a
nice.
Great match. Yeah.
And speaking of great matches, we've got an event that we're very excited about as well, right? We have the Flow Grappling Showdown on February 23rd. So new concept for Flow. We're actually running our own event, and it's a 5-on-5. Not all at the same time. Not 10 guys all grappling at the same time. But
although
we did consider that.
Yeah. But it's a team of 5 up against a team of 5. GF Team versus Atos. And it's happening in Solana Beach at Studio 540. And the only way to watch that is you can't get tickets. You can't be there. The only way to watch is live on Flow Grappling. And that's February 23rd. You guys excited for that?
Man, I'm so pumped. Reed and I are going to be there along with Will. And Ricardo is going to be there. So it's going to be super fun. And I just love the idea. You know, we're seeing more team-based competitions sort of come out in pro jiu-jitsu, but I think this is probably the purest. I mean, these are two teams that train together daily, or two sets of athletes, and representing Atos and GF Team. And they're all elite. So I can't get any better than that.
It's like a straight up old school challenge as well, right? It's like, who's the best team? Let's get them in a neutral space.
Get your five best.
Yeah, get your five best guys in neutral space and let's hash it out.
And of course, there's also $15,000 on the line to the winning team.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, so not a bad day. And man, there's a lot of pride involved. I think these guys really want to rep their teams.
Hell yeah. Exactly. Bonuses for submissions, everything. So plenty of incentive to go out there and win. And even just that repping the team alone is motivation enough, right?
Yeah. And when I was out in California just last week, you know, I did a little bit of stuff with Atos and GF team. And like you said, man, these guys are excited. These guys are excited to rep their team, I think. You know, like, you know, we know that jiu-jitsu is very tribal. You know, that we know that teams are a big, big thing in jiu-jitsu. And I think that this is like a rare opportunity for these guys to really put their team first, you know. And, you know, because jiu-jitsu is an individual sport. It's also a team sport, but it is an individual sport. But this is a real opportunity to go out there and like, you know, represent for your team, right? And it's not just those five guys. You know, Atos is a big international team. GF team is a big international team. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys rooting for their teams all over the world. Like I said,
we've seen
tribal.
It in the comments on our social media. You know,
oh, yeah,
other
are
affiliates
up.
Are fired up to watch their teams go. Andre Galvao and Julio Cesar, both coaches, are going to be there. The presidents of both associations. I can't get any better than that.
Absolutely. Super stoked for that. And
Keenan.
Let's have some of these names involved. We got Keenan, Gutenberg, Lucas Holt, Kainan Duarte, Dante Leon, bunch of the like best guys in the world going head-to-head.
Yeah, and that's it's an interesting...
Spicy.
It's interesting kind of how it all falls down, too, because like you have like Max Jimenez, right? Where Max Jimenez is just, I'm not sure how he is, but he's like 110 kilos. Like he's
and the rest.
Yeah,
he's huge.
He's a huge guy. And Atos doesn't really have a guy who's that big, you know. So they slot in, I believe, Kainan Duarte in there to try to. It's just a super interesting bunch of interesting matchups in there. I think it's. I don't know how exactly
compelling.
That's going to play out.
Very compelling.
It's going to be fun.
So we arrive on the ground that Thursday night. Friday will be the weigh-in, so we'll be doing on-the-ground coverage there, meet with the guys before the bouts happen, and then Saturday, the 23rd, is when the event will go down.
During the day, I believe, right?
During the day. I got to double-check that, but yeah.
West Coast time, but during the day. Yeah. Man, so many great events
and
coming up.
And that's the same day as the Grapple Fest.
It is, yes. Yeah. So many great events
strap
coming
in.
Up.
It's a lot of jiu-jitsu.
Next, this weekend, we've got Fight to Win 102. There's also IBJJF Pan Kids. Weekend after, Grapple Fest 4, Flow Grappling Showdown. And in March, man, pedal to the metal because you got Fight to Win 103, 104, and more. You got Spider is coming up on 2nd of March. You've got Abu Dhabi Grand Slam London and the Abu Dhabi King of Mats Lightweight. Pans, so much awesome jiu-jitsu and grappling. You know that you can watch it all live or on demand only on Flow Grappling. Man, I think that's probably a good place to cap it off. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, right?
Good to be back. That was a lot of fun, boys.
See you again next time.